This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We all love saving money, and it's safe to say we can all relate to resorting to eating instant noodles and figuring out the cheapest transport options when trying to be frugal. But not all of us have created a biodiesel business from straining vegetable oil through an old t-shirt in our kitchens in attempt to be thrifty. That feat belongs to Vinesh Sinha. He's the founder of Fat Hopes Energy, who joins me, Jeff Sandhu, in the studio today on our Open for Business show to share how cost saving and a car show drove him to dominating the biodiesel business in Malaysia and Singapore. Vinesh, welcome to the show. You were initially inspired by watching Jeremy Clarkson in the old Top Gear drive a vegetable oil-fueled Mercedes. How did you figure out how to essentially create your own biodiesel?
First off, thanks for having me. The show was a step-by-step process on how he did it. And that really led me on to trying it on my own. And essentially, if you look back, the diesel engine was invented to run on vegetable oil, on pure vegetable oil. Iterations of the engine over the past century has made the engine a little bit more applicable to the waste-based products that come out of the oil refining. Today, we call that diesel. But it did start off as running on fresh peanut oil. So the engine does not need much work to be done on it, or does not need any work to be done on it, right, for it to run on veg oil. And that's a little bit demystifying the common perception of how we have to treat vegetable oil for it to be usable. So what I did was I really clarified the oil out of the food waste and heated it up to a certain temperature that enabled it to blend with diesel much better so that it stops separating in the tank. And that resulted in a 50% replacement of diesel fuel, which essentially subsidized my fuel bill.
And how long did the whole process kind of take you before you kind of got the perfect initial, you know, conversion completed?
It was some time. It was a many trials and errors, probably across about 6 to 9 months.
Wow.
Where there were many issues with the vehicle, as well as, I mean, an idea at a one tank volume versus doing it for a whole month's requirement of fuel. Even in the process itself, at the process stage itself, getting consistent volumes across a much bigger volume versus what you do over the stove was really challenging. So it's easy to speak about it, but on operationally, it really took a lot of variations to the way I treated the oil. And that process, like I said, took 6 to 9 months. So there were two real challenges. One is, how do you scale up that process in the production stage or in the pre-treatment stage? And then how do you customize or localize that fuel to your engine to make sure that you don't have, to make sure that you have consistency, essentially, where you can start early in the morning when it's below 25 degrees and it can be used all the way up at hot temperatures at 42 degrees.
Right. So what was that process like, taking this business from, like, you know, an old t-shirt in your kitchen to mass production?
So it grew very organically, I will have to say, right? So it started off with me doing it without an intention of a business, doing it for myself while I live day to day, right? And what happened then was I finished secondary education and my A-levels, and I went off to the UK for my tertiary education. And when I arrived in the UK, I came across an article in the newspapers that introduced the 30 pence homebrew fuel tanks. And that was the trigger point for me, because essentially what it was a validation of what I was doing here. Mm. Not so much a validation, when before I left Malaysia, nobody knew what biofuels was. So on top of validation, it was more of an introduction that this is something that's commercially viable. And the second part was me being privy to micro refineries. That was, today I call that small scale, that was producing at a small scale, where I managed to get in to volunteer at to be exposed to the full supply chain. Now, the advantage of working or volunteering in a small outfit is you get involved in the entire process of the business, from the acquisition of the feedstock to the processing and the distribution. And I think that, to be very honest, was one of the best things I did, because if I joined a larger organization, I would have only been privy to a certain part of the business. So the business managed, or it triggered me to think about it from a standpoint of a business, because a hobby, which resulted in me saving 50% of my energy bills, connected me to a micro refinery where I was privy to the entire process. And that exposed me to the technology providers, to the types of investments that need to be made for me to be able to convert this hobby into a consistent production facility, which is extremely crucial in this business, because you cannot have volatility in quality. Mm-hmm. And producing something over a stove or in a kitchen, the biggest issue we had, or I had, was the volatility of quality. And the volatility of quality results or came from the diverse portfolio of waste oil that I collect. So these were the few areas where I had to master, which was the homogenization, and not just thinking about it on a daily batch basis, but thinking about it on across a 30-day. And that resulted in me needing more working capital. So one led to the other in the pursuit for consistency of quality.
All right. And in how long did it actually take you to then, you know, be a proper business and then start hiring people? And who are the first few people that you hired? And where are you now at the moment? Like, what do you do yourself? And what do you do with, you know, the partners or, you know, your clients and stuff?
The hobby started in 2007, and the company was finally established only in 2010. So it started in 2006, and throughout 2006 was when it was hobby stage and me experimenting in that 6 to 9 months I speak about. And then in 2007, by this time I had gone to the UK and come back, was when I started looking at it as how, from a standpoint of a cottage industry, if you want to call it. And I didn't have a business, and the company was not registered, but there were a few people who were interested in buying the bio-based fuels. And essentially, that was because oil was at its all-time high, and people were looking for alternatives, especially in the industrial sector where there was no subsidy on the diesel. And that fueled the business, right? So 2007 to 2010 was me really learning the ropes, bearing in mind I was 17 years old, was me learning the ropes of business more than the science part of the fuel production, and raising money and all of those kind of stuff. I mean, when I started the business, I came up with a business plan that had no working capital requirement, which was pretty ridiculous. Now looking back, I don't know what I was thinking. And that business plan went around to quite a number of people that I thought would point out these kind of things. But when people don't understand or don't have a precedent of this certain business, it's very hard to point out something you don't know. You essentially don't know what you don't know. So it was pretty long, I would think, 3 years for me to take it from an intention of a business to registering a business. And we finally registered the business in 2010. Now, over the past 10 years or so, 9 plus 10 years or so, the business has exponentially grown. We are probably at about 500 times bigger than we were in 2010. Today, we cater to service almost all fast food restaurants across the country. The major names are obvious. Apart from that, we are also a very big importer of waste oil from across the region. And the reason for that is, as we grew our volumes and we became more and more competitive in the business realm, margins started to erode. And the only way we can continue at this growth trajectory, to continue to deliver the value we have committed to our stakeholders, which is essentially guaranteeing the proper disposal of waste oil so that it doesn't go back to the food stream, ensuring that we're producing a product that's significantly less, or results in significantly less emissions than conventional diesel, as well as doing all of this in a cost-comparative manner, meant we had to grow scale exponentially. So today, as I said, we are in the realm of thousands of tons. We are dealing with oil and gas companies. What we do is we aggregate a large volume of waste oils across the region via our direct fleet, which is a bunch of vehicles that we own. And we also import a lot of waste oils from across the region, as far down as Australia and all the way up to China, Hong Kong, and all of this come in. And this is where I see a unique opportunity for the industry and for the country. And the reason for this is because Malaysia has got great expertise in the veg oil industry, and that's because of our palm sector. But today, with the negative publicity and the bad image that palm has garnered due to, in my opinion, false generalizations of deforestation, etc., we need to reposition these skills that we have and these investments that we have made in this country that can cater for veg oil-based refining and center ourselves really in the middle of the industry.
Now, I'm speaking to Vinish Sinha. He's from Fat Hopes Energy. And when we come back, we'll talk about how digitalization has improved your entire business. Of course, growing 500 times from when you first started about 10 years ago is a number that I guess every entrepreneur would want to have as well. So we'll stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back, and you're listening to Open for Business with me, Jeff Sandhu, together with Vinesh Sinha. He's from Fat Hopes Energy, and we're talking about the biodiesel industry. And of course, you know, that's what you are doing as well. So let's talk. You said you started in about 2010 was when the company was registered. And 9 years from then, you know, your company has grown about 500 times from what it kind of first started. How much has digitalization involved in this entire process, and how much has it actually improved your business when it comes to efficiency? Because I'm assuming that is the core for your business to be, you know, on this exponential scale.
So I'll step back a little bit because I think it's important to put some setting to this. So Fat Hopes Energy collects a variety of waste oils from across 18,000 locations directly in the region. And these include fast food restaurants, these include factories, this includes institutional buildings like airports and hospitals. There's a big variety in the assets or in the locations that we service. Number one, every one of them operate within a different tempo, whether it's a 24-hour cycle, and what kind of customers come through there during what kind of peak and off-peak seasons and timings of the day, of the month, of the year. That's the first thing. The second thing is we are collecting a waste material that not many organizations have a method to measure and to monitor. 99% of the time, the waste revenue that's generated goes to the guys at the back of the outlet, and the HQ never sees the light of that revenue. And it can be in the millions per year, especially for sizable fast food chains. So what we did, or the push for digitization, came from the optimization of logistics. And what do I mean by this? When I have 18,000 locations, I had to scale my fleet based on the number of points of collection that I had, which did not make any sense because we were visiting locations that did not have oil or did not have waste materials for us to pick up from. So my fleet started to grow with the number of points of origin, when actually what should happen is my fleet should grow with the amount of oil we are picking up. Right, that's the logic, but the logic generally just never works. And the reason for that is we had no visibility on how much oil was at a particular location before we got there. So in 2012, I embarked on a development of a sensing technology for each and every one of these locations to report daily on how much waste oil is in that particular location. And this sensing technology panned out to have many more benefits to the point of origin, to a particular restaurant or a factory, than I ever thought would exist. And what is that? So when I enable for visibility of a particular location to report back waste oil volumes, they could tag that volume to the new oil they were buying. And this means they could optimize their new oil purchases, and it could be JIT instead of buying it based on a fixed schedule and then having the issues of the new oil getting expired within the location, number one. Number two, each and every one of these tanks have a direct connection to where the waste oil is being produced, whether that's a fryer or whatever that is. And this is to eliminate the pilferage or the missing link between the point of origin of the waste oil and the tank in, or the receptacle that is being collected in. But that link then brought another round of benefit, which is limiting hot oil exposure to the staff that was disposing the waste oil. And this reduced turnover of staff within restaurants because a new personnel would join the restaurant and they would generally be assigned to do the worst job, right, which was the waste oil clearing. And now that they've limited that and students who are waiting for their results, generally spoiled children today, the moment they're exposed to those kind of work, they don't show up for work tomorrow. But now that that's been limited, the turnover has reduced. Another big benefit that has come around from this is these restaurants or factories used to have two sets of fryers, two banks, one running and one on standby because oil in this country takes about 8 hours to cool because of our weather. But now because our system accommodates hot oil at boiling temperature, they reduce the capital requirement from two sets of fryers to one set of fryer.
Hmm.
So these three big benefits that can only be monetized by the point of origin, and it's a significant cost saving for them because a bank of three fryers costs anywhere between ₱500,000 to ₱1,000,000. Apart from that, they also save real estate because they now can shrink the kitchen. Now, these three benefits got the market to pull on and push us to deliver on this solution, which we call the Fat Hope's Energy iTank, right? Now, getting to the digitization, the moment you enable visibility and you have the trigger from the market that wants it, it's easy to encroach and to pull out information, right? So we had to work it from the perspective of delivering a solution that the vendor wanted so that he or she would be comfortable with us to have the data. Now, that partnership, or that's when we started to look for a connectivity partner. And that's how Maxis came into the picture. And today we use a solution that they have customized for us, which is a convergence between our sensing technology, which draws data from each point of origin and assigns that point of collection to each of our drivers. So we ring fence locations and we associate a particular driver to that a geofence, and that particular driver then becomes fully responsible for all those tanks. Whether those tanks are full or not, he would pick it up based on an algorithm that has been set to enable his truck to be full every day. And that is how we have come around to optimize logistics and vis-a-vis reduce our carbon footprint because every single kilometer that's traveled today is 100% utilized.
So digitalization for you has not only seen benefits for your customers, but also for yourselves then, because you are running your business a lot more efficient than it was simply because it's just given you transparency into what you do in your daily basis.
Yeah. So to add to that, my vendors have benefited tremendously from it. I call them vendors because they're suppliers. We buy waste oil from them. It's brought tremendous sustainability as well as financial efficiency to our business because logistics has been optimized tremendously. But the biggest attribute of this entire endeavor has been that via visibility and via the improvement of transparency, we are able to guarantee the entire supply chain. And this is where I'm getting to my customers, the big oil and gas companies that are mandated to supply a bio component in their diesel. They need to know and they need to have the peace of mind that every drop that we supply is truly waste-based. And today, due to our system, they can actually log on, figure out where the waste oil has come from before they have purchased the oil, sanction those volumes, may it be with commissioning of third-party surveyors to audit those locations. And then they can decide to purchase those materials so that they know, like I said, 100% that is waste-based and deliver it into their markets that have mandated that they cannot have palm-based biofuels. They need to have waste-based biofuels. Mm. And what we really strive to achieve is for them to have the peace of mind from the onset, preemptive instead of retrospective, because the entire world has worked on sustainability reporting from a retrospective perspective. And that is something that I feel is a big threat to the sustainability industry, because if it's retrospective and there is an issue, the issue or the shortcoming has already occurred. And the sustainability realm needs to have validation and needs to continue to have bona fide results, because every time you allow for a small mistake to happen, people then lose faith in sustainability.
What's changed in the industry since you've been around for a number of years now working with the biofuel industry itself? biodiesel industry. What's changed and what do you hope that we can do more in the industry?
I come from an extremely positive perspective that awareness has been raised over the past decade exponentially in a quite a tremendous area. From the perspective of the push for biodiesel started with carbon emissions reduction. Today, we are able to tell the difference between a virgin-based biodiesel and a waste-based biodiesel. When I started this business, nobody knew the difference. And I think that's fundamental. And the reason for that is because just because we are hunting lower emissions does not mean we can compromise in another area. And a very good example is solar versus nuclear, right? We don't know what is the true life cycle potential emissions of solar because we've not lived through the life cycle of solar, but we know what the true life cycle potential of a nuclear is. And today, if you look at it, you would think that nuclear is cleaner than solar if you look at it as the entire life cycle. And that's what has come around in the biodiesel industry. We have managed to tell the difference between feedstocks and the sources of raw materials that biodiesel is produced from. Right, and that has resulted in many regulations around the world that have come up with regulations specific for their nation, which I think is paramount because every region of the world has got their own assets in terms of what grows and what doesn't grow, what kind of streams of waste they have. And I think sustainability needs to come with a fair bit of localization because that's when you limit importation, that's when you don't reach around the world to pull in resources and in that process emit even more than you are savings. So has been a significant change in the industry over the course of the past decade. Moving forward, I think that there is too much focus or we're constantly looking for this silver bullet solution. The age of one solution is over and we have to come to terms with that. The age of the time where we can rely on single source of energy, which we have been reliant on fossil fuels, is over. And I'm saying this from the perspective of biofuels is not the only solution. It's the most convenient solution because it fits within existing infrastructure. But the sooner we diversify our portfolio, may it be from the perspective of feedstocks or may it be from the perspective of different processes resulting in a cleaner liquid fuels, for example, end-of-life plastic to a diesel replacement or anything else, is where I think the industry should go. Because as we push volume or demand into a certain, a limited source, we are either going to see a lot of fraud or we're going to see a lot of blending, indiscriminate blending that's going to happen behind, on the back of a feel-good factor of waste-based biofuels. So we need to take a step back and look at it from an aerial view and really start working on a diversified portfolio, notwithstanding the fact that it needs to fit within the existing infrastructure. Mm. Because if we expect a change of infrastructure, the adoption is going to take a long time and it's going to be a huge requirement for investment. Mm.
And your ambition is to expand throughout Southeast Asia by year 2020 and we're not far away. How's that coming along and what else can we expect from Fat Hopes in the future?
So digitization has enabled us to scale like a tech company, essentially. And what I mean by this is conventionally, when we moved into new jurisdictions, we had to set up the entire logistics infrastructure to be able to cater for our anchor suppliers, right? The fast food restaurants or the factories. Today, due to our digitization and our sensing technology, what we are able to do is we are able to confidently partner with existing waste oil collectors. And our partnership starts off with deployment of our technology. So the way we move now into jurisdictions is we secure a key customer. Mm-hmm. We deploy our sensing technology within that key customer's locations. And we appoint the existing collector that has been servicing them. And this augurs well because we are not cutting people out of the supply chain. We commission them to be the authorized collector for us. They collect it from the particular location. And because we have daily visibility, we have the trust and faith in the volumes and in the business, in the work that they are doing. They bring it back to their central facility where it's amalgamated. And they export all those volumes out to us here in Malaysia. So we do not own the molecule till it hits the Malaysian port, but we are responsible for the entire supply chain to the anchor customer. And we are willing to do that because we've got visibility across the entire supply chain. Mm-hmm. Now, this has enabled us to scale at an unprecedented pace, number one. Number two, it's enabled us to be a lot more inclusive. We are able to include the existing collectors who 99% of the time do not have, are not very well organized. And we have managed to create entrepreneurship-like a package for them that gets them remunerated based on throughput. Conventionally, they would be speculating. They would buy at a certain price, and if they didn't have sufficient volume, they would sell at a very high price because they would need to cover their cost. Mm. Today, because we have visibility and we give them locations that have got high throughput volume, we are essentially guaranteeing them volume of business. So they are able to amortize their cost a lot more effectively. In some cases, shrink the operations. In some cases, grow the operations. But they now have good visibility on what their entire portfolio truly is compared to trying to have grow their fleet bigger and bigger and go from shop to shop every day and try and tout for business. So we have legitimized, or would I say standardized, the industry a lot better. We've created opportunity for many more people across the region. And we have, of course, for ourselves, enabled us to test many different options in terms of how deep do we want to go into a particular country. And with in many of the countries regionally, you need to have local ownership. And due to this process that we have adopted, we are able to be literally the pipeline for waste oil to be channeled out of that country through a business that is 100% owned by a local, where Fed Hope's Energy has got very, very minimal intervention with at a structure level. But we are really hand-holding them throughout the process operationally. And we operate all of this through our holding company, where we give or we take the anchor contracts from these big chains on a national level.
So in some ways, you are now slightly pivoting towards a technology-based company in the biodiesel industry, right?
We are very much a brick-and-mortar business. Mm. We operate refineries. We operate a lot of trucks. Mm. But what we have really done is we've used technology, and we have not, we did not embark on technology for the sake of technology, right? We've used technology in our biggest pain points, and we look at technology, to be very honest, as a complementary endeavor to what we do. And the reason for that is we started the business to provide total transparency. And total transparency, if it's not in real time, total transparency can be questionable. And technology enables us essentially to provide real-time data. And that, if I were to pick one attribute of digitization that has got us hooked onto using it, it's that. It's creating real-time data that can be questioned anywhere in the world at any time. And because it's real-time, it's very, very difficult for it not to be reliable, for it not to be accurate, for it not to be of high integrity. And that's something that I think no other solution out there can provide. Mm.
Vinish, it's been totally inspiring, and I wish Fat Hope's Energy all the best in the future. That was Vinish Sinha from Fat Hope's Energy, and this has been Open for Business. If you missed any parts of this interview, you can download the podcast. It's available now on the BFM website or the BFM app, and also on Spotify. This has been Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.